Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. I'd like to read verses 18 to verse 32. Very familiar passage of Scripture. We've preached from this passage a couple of times here. We want to preach the message that we preached Thursday evening at the conference. We'd like to read verses 18 through verse 32. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image, made like to corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their own lust, in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet or fitting. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind, to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. The subject of these verses is the wrath of God. That is stated in verse 18. Now, the wrath of God, of course, is not a popular subject in the secular world, and it is not a popular subject in the so-called religious world. What we read here in Romans chapter 1 is very descriptive of our society, very descriptive of the culture and the times and even the world in which you and I live. What we read here helps us to understand. I mean, we can all see what is happening. All you have to do is watch the news and look around, and you can see what is happening. And certainly, Romans chapter 1 tells us what is happening. But Romans chapter 1 tells us why it is happening. And we need to understand what is happening right before our eyes. But perhaps more importantly, we need to understand why. Why is our society the way that it is? Why are these things happening? I mean, things are happening that you and I never expected to happen on this scale. So why? Why are these things happening? And we know that Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1 that perilous times shall come, that is, in the last days, perilous times shall come. And we know that, and we need to be aware of the times in which we live. We need to have some grasp. We need to have some comprehension of the times in which we are called to live. Again, in our text, we are plainly and directly told not only what is happening, but we are told why it is happening. And those things for the children of God ought to challenge us. They ought to encourage us. They ought to strengthen us to steadfastness and perseverance. I want to speak on the subject of living in a society under the wrath of God. Living in a society under the wrath of God. We have two main points. The majority of the message will be spent on the first point. In fact, almost all of it will be. And that is the fact of the wrath of God. And then secondly, we want to see how are we to live in such a time. But first, notice the fact of the wrath of God, and then some things concerning the wrath of God. We see in verse 18 that wrath is attributed to God. We read those words, "For the wrath of God." That little word "of" reveals the fact that wrath is a characteristic. Wrath is a distinctive quality of God. Wrath is something that belongs to God. It is referred to in several different ways throughout the Old Testament. It is referred to as the heat of His great anger in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 29 and verse 24. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 30 and verse 30, it is referred to as the indignation of His anger. In Isaiah 43 and 25, it is referred to as the fury of His anger. In the book of Hosea, it's referred to as the fierceness of His anger. So from those verses, it is very plain to see that the wrath of God is closely associated with another characteristic, another quality of God that people do not want to think about, and that is His anger. Wrath and anger go hand in hand. We read in Psalm 7 and verse 11 that God is angry with the wicked every day. So what is anger? Anger is resentful displeasure. Anger is strong antagonism stirred up by a sense of injury or insult. God is angry. God is angry with the wicked every day. Now, throughout the Scriptures, the wrath of God, to me, seems to be the display of God's anger. It is when God displays His anger, that's wrath. That is what is called the wrath of God. Now, immediately, someone says, well, God is a God of love, and that's true. He is. Love is just one attribute of God. Just like wrath is an attribute of God. The thing we have to remember, when we're talking about God, we're talking about perfection. And the attributes of God are balanced. There is a balanced perfection about the attributes of God. That is, God hates wickedness just as much as He loves righteousness. There is a balance because God is perfect. So we have the wrath of God. That is a fact, the wrath of God. But we see something else here in verse 18, that the wrath of God is something that is unveiled. In other words, it is something that is shown. It is something that is manifested. Notice in verse 18 again, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven. That is, it is displayed from heaven. It is unveiled from heaven. It is uncovered. It is opened. It is disclosed. It is made known. So the wrath of God is not a secret. the wrath of God is revealed from heaven. That is simply a statement of fact. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven. But then notice also here in verse 18, we have the focus of the wrath of God. And God's wrath is focused upon three things here in verse 18. We see the object of this wrath. And again, the object of God's wrath in verse 18 is threefold. We see the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against or upon all ungodliness. That is object number one, ungodliness. Ungodliness is simply the absence of reverence toward God. It is irreverence toward God. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all irreverence toward God. The second thing, he goes on, and unrighteousness, which of course is just the absence of what is right. Now, if you have ungodliness, the lack of reverence toward God, you are also going to have unrighteousness. They're two different things in a way, but you cannot separate the two. So the wrath of God is revealed against ungodliness. The wrath of God is revealed against unrighteousness. And then notice the third thing of men. The wrath of God is revealed against men. And then he goes on to describe these individuals. It is men who hold. And the word hold there means to suppress, to hinder, to hold back. And what is it that they suppress? What is it that they hinder? What is it that they hold back? The truth. Of men who hold the truth. They hold it back. And how do they do that? It tells us in unrighteousness. That is, by their unrighteous lives. They suppress the truth. And the wrath of God is revealed or unveiled against ungodliness, unrighteousness, and of men who hold back the truth in their unrighteous ways. So we see the wrath is a characteristic. Wrath is a quality of God. The wrath of God is unveiled. And the focus of that wrath is ungodliness, unrighteousness, and men who hinder or hold back the truth in unrighteousness. Now, there are different aspects of the wrath of God. Different aspects of God's wrath. And this is seen throughout the Scriptures. There, of course, is the eternal wrath of God. When God casts someone into hell, that is the eternal wrath of God. There is such a thing as the eternal wrath of God. We read about it all through the Scriptures. There is also what I would call the eschatological wrath of God, and that is when God pours His wrath down upon the earth during the tribulation period. Certainly that is a display of the wrath of God. There is also the wrath of God that shows itself in volcanoes, hurricanes, storms, floods, all of these things. These two can be the wrath of God. And oftentimes, we only think of that aspect of God's wrath. And we say the United States or our society, we're headed for the wrath of God. And that's true, we are. But it's also true we're under the wrath of God right now, which we're going to show. But when people say, oh, if we continue on, God's going to pour down His wrath. What they're saying is, God's going to pour down fire and brimstone in judgment. And certainly He will. But that is only one aspect of God's wrath. I believe there is a wrath worse than that. There's nothing worse than eternal wrath. But there is a wrath, I believe, worse than fire and brimstone. It is a wrath that will certainly lead to fire and brimstone. And that is the wrath of abandonment. When God abandons a people. When God abandons a society. And when God abandons a society or when God abandons a people, what He does is He just leaves them to themselves. That's the wrath of God. And we're under it. We're experiencing that wrath right now. Right before our eyes. It's when God turns his back upon a people. We see this throughout the scriptures in Proverbs chapter 1, verses 24 through 31. We'll not turn there to save time. But this wrath of abandonment is spoken of. In verse 30 and 31 of Proverbs chapter 1, we see, "They would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices." That's God's wrath. That's the wrath of God. This wrath of abandonment in Hosea 4 and verse 17, we read, "Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone." That's God speaking. He says, Ephraim is so connected with idols. Hosea, don't preach to him anymore. Just leave him alone. Let him go. That's wrath. That is the wrath of God. And I believe that's where we are in our society. Now, we see it is stated three times in our text. Notice verse 24. God also gave them up. That's wrath. Verse 26, God gave them up. Verse 28, God gave them over. Three times it is stated that God had abandoned the people, that God has just left the people to themselves. And when God does that, that's wrath. And when God does that, things get out of control, humanly speaking. This aspect of God's wrath is already operating in our society and in the world at present. We are living in a society under this aspect of the wrath of God. Then notice the reasons. The reasons for this wrath. Again, the subject is stated in verse 18, the wrath of God. Verse 19, the very first word after stating the fact of the wrath of God, he says, because. Because. So we've read about the wrath of God. Now we're going to see the reason. When we see the word because, we know the reason is about to be stated. The reason is going to follow. The word because simply means for this reason. So this wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness and men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness for this reason. And then Paul proceeds to give the reasons. He proceeds to give the causes for this aspect of the wrath of God, which is God just leaving a people to themselves. Now, you and I as God's people, we are not under this wrath. God has not left us. God is not going to leave us. God's not going to forsake us. But we live in a society that is under this wrath of God. God has left them. That is, God has left them to themselves. Why? Well, he states the reasons. Because. Verse 19, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. Verse 20, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. He is saying creation itself declares God, declares the power of God, declares the Godhead. But the problem is that man rejects that revelation. We see in verse 20, for they are without excuse. God's power is clearly seen in creation. Therefore, when they look up at the stars at night, they are without excuse. When they look around and see God's creation all around them, they are without excuse. Because common sense tells you that if there is a creation, there has to be a creator. If there is a design, there has to be a designer. Everybody knows that. But the problem is man has rejected that knowledge. Or man has rejected that revelation. You see, God has inlaid the evidence of spiritual and moral truth and of His own existence and of His own greatness and of His own power in the very fabric of man's being. And therefore, they are without excuse. Notice verse 21. Because. There it is again. Second time we've seen that word. Because. Keep in mind the subject is the wrath of God being unveiled or being revealed from heaven. Because, or for this reason, referring back to why they are without excuse, that when they knew God, that is, as a result of the revelation of God, as a result of creation, they glorified Him not as God. That is, they did not acknowledge Him as God. They did not worship Him. And then notice the next word, neither. That shows a connection. Shows a connection. It shows a connection that they not only did not acknowledge God, they not only did not worship God, but neither were thankful. And if you do not acknowledge God, you're not going to be thankful. Neither were thankful. Man, society, and the world has to do something with the revelation of God. And everybody has a revelation of God. And when a society or a people turn their back upon the revelation of God, they are headed for the wrath of God. And that is what has happened. You see, the problem is not that man can't find God. That's not the problem. God's all around us. The problem is that man does not recognize God. If God were standing right in front of them, they wouldn't recognize Him. If Jesus Christ were standing right in front of them, they would not recognize Him. It's not that they can't find Him, they do not recognize. It's not that they can't find the truth. It's right here. It's that they will not recognize the truth when it's put right before them. That is a rejection of knowledge. That is a rejection of God. Man does not want to honor God. Man does not want to acknowledge God. When that happens, that is a reason and that is a cause of the wrath of God. So the first reason or cause of this wrath is a rejection of God. Everywhere you turn in our society, there is a rejection of God. Our society a long time ago began to outlaw God. They have rejected God. And things have not gotten better. Things have only gotten worse. And this rejection of God leads to the next effect. There is cause and effect. And Romans chapter 1 teaches very clearly effect or results. So the next effect also becomes the next cause for the wrath of God. So you get into a spiral that you cannot escape from. And it all began with a rejection of God. Notice verse 21. They rejected God. They did not glorify Him as God, neither were thankful. And then notice the effect of that. They became vain. They became vain or futile. Empty and worthless. In their imaginations, which is talking about their thoughts, their thought process, because they did not glorify God, because they did not because they rejected God, because they rejected the revelation of God, the effect of that is they became empty and futile in their thoughts. In other words, they no longer think right. That happened a long time ago and continues to progress. But he goes on. And they're foolish. Foolish meaning without understanding. Their foolish hearts were darkened or covered with darkness. Now the effect of this is stated in verse 22. The effect of verse 21 is stated in verse 22. Professing themselves to be wise. You see, they're empty in their thoughts. They're futile in their thoughts. They are vain. But they profess themselves to be wise. God has left them to themselves, and they eventually come to the point where they think that they are smarter than God. That's where we are. Our society today thinks that they are smarter than God. Most of those in politics today think that they are smarter than God. The educational system of the United States of America thinks that they are smarter than God. Scientists think that they are smarter than God. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And again, that word fools is the same word in which we get our English word moron. They profess themselves wise. You know, man actually believes today that people are smarter today than they ever were before. I wholeheartedly disagree. I believe people today are stupider than they've ever been and more ignorant than they've ever been. In fact, I believe if you look back and if you had a fifth grade education 40 years ago, you knew more then than you know if somebody graduates from college today. Overall. I realize not about computers and all that, but overall intelligence. Professing themselves to be wise, they became morons. That is, the result of their empty thoughts led to their hearts being immersed in darkness, and all of this led to them professing themselves to be wise, but they are fools or morons. In their professed wisdom, they give us such philosophies as there is no such thing as truth. That's their wisdom. And if there is such a thing as truth, it is completely relative, and it is completely subjective to your circumstances or your viewpoint. Professing themselves to be wise. Professing themselves, in their professed wisdom, they tell us that there is no right. Well, that's smart. In their professed wisdom, they say there is no wrong. But the truth is, they have become fools. In their professed wisdom, they say that we must be tolerant and we must be accepting of all beliefs. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And now stability, morality, and self-discipline in the home are things of the past. And who do we have to thank? Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And in their professed wisdom, marriage is no longer considered sacred. Marriage is no longer necessarily between a man and a woman. Professing themselves to be wise. This is what they've given us in their so-called wisdom. Professing themselves to be wise, and now people are under the control of their baser instincts and live like animals. And that's an insult to the animal kingdom. But it's the truth. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And now wrong is defended. And right, that which is right and that which is decent is ridiculed and mocked and attacked. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And the result of their professed wisdom, we now have political correctness. It came from the professed wisdom of man. And political correctness is simply an attack upon our society. And it stifles liberty. It does away with common sense. And it changes the very definition of words. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And they have filled our school systems. They have filled our judicial system. Our problem today is we have a bunch of morons teaching our kids. We have a bunch of morons sitting on benches in courts. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And the problem is today, these morons vote, and who do they vote for? Other morons. So the person who has the best chance today of winning any political race is a moron. Because that's most of the folks that are voting. Because God's left us to ourselves. God has left our society to ourselves. And now we live in a society that knows more than God. So they think. Now, notice this leads to the next effect. Verse 23. Verse 22, professing themselves wise, they became fools. Here's the next effect. They changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man and the birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. That's humanism. That's all it is. That is the next effect, which also becomes the next cause for the wrath of God. Now notice verse 24. Wherefore? That is, this goes back to what was stated in verse 23. Wherefore, God also, the word also means in addition to everything that we've read up to this point, not only did they become vain in their imaginations, not only did they become fools, not only did they change the glory of the uncorruptible God, God also gave them up to uncleanness. That is, God just let them go. And where are they going to? Uncleanness. Because that's their nature. That's their nature. So this is a terrible wrath to be under when God just lets a people go. Because that people is going to go into uncleanness. And I believe our nation, our society, our culture, and our world is under this aspect of the wrath of God. How do we know? How do we know when a society is under this aspect of the wrath of God? Sin will run rampant. When a society is under this aspect of God's wrath, sin will run rampant. It's just like the sewers have been opened. And that's where we are today. It's like someone has just opened the sewer and goes everywhere. And verses 24 through verse 32 reveal that sin is both the cause and sin is also the effect of this wrath of God. In other words, sin is the reason. Sin is also the result. When God lets a people go, sin is going to progress. And it's going to just continue to get worse and worse, and a people gets to a point of no return. And I believe with all of my heart that our society is at a point of no return. That is, the things that we read of here in Romans 1, they're not going away. They're not going away. You're not going to see a great revival that's going to be worldwide. I believe the Lord's churches can experience revivals. You're not going to see a great revival in society because we're under this aspect of the wrath of God. And once you're under this aspect of the wrath of God, things continue to get worse and worse and worse. And that's why we read that evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse and worse, because they're under this wrath of God. So what all this leads to in verse 24 is sexual immorality. Wherefore, for this reason or purpose, God also gave them up. That is, God ceased to restrain them, permitted them to act out their own lust. And what this led to is uncleanness or impurity and moral defilement through the lust of their own hearts. He left them to act out their depraved passions and inclinations. And what this did, it caused them to dishonor or to disgrace their own bodies between or among themselves. And then notice verse 26. Verse 25, the result of verse 24, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. That is the result of, or the effect of, verse 24. Then verse 26, for this cause, on account of this, on account of what has just been said, for this cause God gave them up. God let them go. God let them go. And what this led to is vile affections. Vile affections. There's nothing good about vile affections. Nothing. The word vile, I mean, you could think of a lot of words to describe the word vile. Corrupt. Corrupt affections. Depraved. Twisted. Perverted. Gross. Obscene. Vulgar. Disgusting. Foul. Nasty. Abhorrent. And many others you could think of. Repulsive. Revolting. God let them go. And this led to vile affections. And what he's talking about here, he goes on to describe it as an exchange for the natural. Verse 26. And then verse 27, he refers to it as that which is unseemly or shameful and improper. And what he's talking about is homosexuality. That's what he's talking about. Homosexuality is the result of this wrath of God. God just letting man go to himself. The very fact that it exists today shows us that we are under the wrath of God. And then this is surrounded by people who profess themselves to be wise, but are fools. And they begin to support these vile affections. You're not only under this aspect of the wrath of God, you are also headed for another aspect of the wrath of God. Fire and brimstone or destruction. Now, again, we're not going to spend a lot of time, but you see a progression here in verses 26 and verse 27. You have homosexuality. God called it an abomination. Homosexuals are referred to as the sons of Belial in Judges 19:22. You know what that means? That means it's demonic. That's what it means. It's demonic in origin. We're not talking about an alternative lifestyle. We're not talking about that which is gay. We're talking about that which is vile. Now, there's a big difference between gay and vile. A huge difference. And we need to call it for what it is. It's vile. It's vile. It's filthy. And it's a result of the wrath of God. The effect, of course, becomes the next cause. Notice verse 28. God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient or fitting. The very word reprobate means to be abandoned. It's to be abandoned. A reprobate mind is a mind that has been abandoned by God. A mind that has been left to itself. Listen to the so-called experts today. And I'm telling you, they are of reprobate mind. Their mind has been abandoned by God. And they are the ones who are the experts. A reprobate mind is a useless mind. It is a mind that has lost its ability to think. It is a mind that has lost its ability to reason and has lost its ability to comprehend. And we elect these people in office. I mean, they do not have the ability to think. They do not have the ability to reason. They do not have the ability to comprehend. They are of reprobate mind. They are under the wrath of God. And the result is stupidity and ignorance is at an all-time high. We've got bigger problems than we've ever had, and stupidity and ignorance is at an all-time high. We're in trouble. We're in serious trouble. Not as God's people, but as a society. And because of a reprobate mind, we have witnessed with our own eyes the very death of common sense. And the death of discernment. Because God has left them. And their minds are now reprobate. Common sense has vanished. It has vanished in raising children. I mean, it's gone. I mean, I'm talking about society as a whole. I'm not talking about everyone. But society as a whole. It has vanished in the courtrooms. It has vanished in the House of Representatives. It has vanished in the Senate. It has vanished in the Congress. It has vanished. It's gone. And it's not coming back. Because they've been given over to a reprobate mind. It's not coming back. These things are gone. We need to realize that. The reprobate mind, the conscience cannot function. And we are a society without a conscience. Because they're reprobate. And that is because they're under this wrath of God. But not only that, a reprobate mind can't find its way back. It's lost its way and it can't find its way back. And that's where we are as a society. When a people have lost their ability to reason, when a people have lost their ability to think right, and when the conscience is seared, it is evidence that a nation or society is under this wrath or abandonment from God. And people being of reprobate mind, these things are filthy. We see in verse 29 through 32, we certainly do not have time to look at this, but notice being filled. That is, being immersed. And then he mentions all of these sins. Terrible things. And we're not only immersed with it, but our government subsidizes it. Why? Because they're a reprobate mind. They've lost their minds. They have no sense. They profess themselves to be wise, but they've become fools. So what are we to do as God's people? We live in a society that is already under this wrath of God. The wrath of abandonment. Does that mean that no one can be saved? Of course not. It's not what it means at all. But the ways of man, God has left man to himself, and the ways of man has led society into the mire, into the muck, into the sludge of sin. The ways of man has led that. I mean, listen to the so-called intelligent people today. Give their idea of a solution to problems, and it's unbelievable. No insult to first graders, but you could sit down a first grader and come up with a better solution. Because these folks have lost their minds. And that's the society that we're in. But what are we to do? Many would tell us that we need a new Bible. No, that's not what we need. We need to declare the one we got. Others will say, well, we need to scrap the old hymnals in favor of contemporary. That'll help us, they say. We need to replace preaching. Most people don't like preaching. No kidding. But you don't replace it. We need to lower our standards in order to accommodate the world. Many of the Lord's churches have done that. We need to lower our standards so that we do not make people feel bad about themselves. We want them to feel good about themselves. We don't want the sinner, the lost sinner, the one living in filth, walking from this building feeling good about themselves. I would like for them to go from here feeling that there's hope, that the Lord can save them. But I don't want them to feel good about themselves while they're living in sin. And God help us that we would not accommodate. You see, it's not our duty to make God acceptable. It's not my responsibility. It's not your responsibility. It's our duty to simply declare who He is. It's not our duty to make the Word of God acceptable. It's our duty to declare it. It's not our duty to make the ways of God acceptable. Our duty is to declare the ways of the Lord. It is not our duty to make the Lord's church more acceptable and more appealing to the world. And that's all the so-called marketing systems, that's all they're about, is making the Lord, making the churches more appealing to society. Well, you'd better wake up and realize the condition of society. They're reprobate. And you're going to appeal to them? You'll go down the same road. You go down the very same road. You end up in the same place. It's not our duty to make the church more acceptable. It is our duty to do the business of the Lord. It's not our duty to be loved. It's not our duty to be accepted. It's our duty to simply do the business of the Lord. You see, we live in a society that is under the wrath of God. We cannot afford to lose our focus. We cannot afford to lose our focus of what it's all about. We cannot adapt. We cannot embrace the philosophies of the world. Remember the society that you're in. Before you go embrace the so-called new philosophies of society, you had better read Romans 1 and realize the society that you're living in. And how in the world can you embrace the philosophies of those who profess themselves to be wise and have become fools? We cannot allow our minds to become clouded with the philosophies and the carnal reasoning of the ungodly. It just can't happen. We cannot allow biblical convictions to be weakened. We are in a society under the wrath of God. Man is going his own way, doing that which is right in their own eyes, leading to a cesspool of sin. And we cannot allow biblical convictions to be weakened If anything, they ought to be stronger than they ever were before. You say, well, if you get stronger in your convictions, we won't have as many people. So be it. You cannot allow convictions to be weakened. We must not resign ourselves to the status quo. Well, you know, that's the way it is. Yeah, I know that's the way it is. But that's not the way it's got to be in the Lord's church. We cannot resign ourselves to the status quo. We have to make a clear distinction in our lives between our lives and the lives of the world. We need to make a clear distinction in our families. Our families ought to be radically different than the families of a society that is under the wrath of God. Something is terribly wrong when there is not a clear distinction between the people of God and a society that has been abandoned by God. This is no time to get comfortable. It's no time for God's people to get comfortable. It's no time to settle down in complacency. We cannot afford to be cold. We cannot afford to be careless. We cannot afford to be lax. We cannot afford to be indifferent. There's too much at stake. We have to stand. Because if we don't, who's going to? If we don't declare the truth, who's going to? If we don't encourage one another to be steadfast in the faith, who's going to encourage us? The world's not going to encourage us in the things of the Lord. We have to be busy doing these things. God help us to realize that we are living in a society under this aspect of the wrath of God. God help us to realize our responsibility and realize that very soon we're going to be released from this mess. Very soon we're going to be set free from this mess. But until then, we have a duty and we have a responsibility. The one who saved our soul. We have a duty. We have a responsibility to raise our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Don't turn your children over to the reprobate. Don't turn them over to the reprobate and let them fill your children with their philosophies. You'll lose them. Lose them. And people say, well, Brother Dan, we can't be too protective. You read Romans 1 again. And you read it until you understand. You need to protect your children. You need to protect them from that which is vile. It's not a very good parent that will not protect their children. Well, they've got to learn. Then teach them the truth. What do you want them to learn? God help us to realize the society, the mess that we're in. And God help us to realize that, for the most part, these things are here to stay. It's not going to get better. You say, well, I wish you wouldn't say that. That discourages me. It shouldn't. It ought to encourage you. Because when we see these things come to pass, lift your eyes up, your redemption draweth nigh. We're almost there. We're almost home. Don't quit now. Don't give up now. Don't throw your hands up in despair now. Come too far. Turn back. God help us. And oh, how we ought to pray for a society that's under the wrath of God. Because I do believe that God still has the elect out there that He's going to save. And we need to pray that the Lord would save souls and deliver them from this mess that our society is in. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song. Let's all stand, brother.